Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, what did singer Janis Joplin do on this very day back in 1970? Was it A, she won a Grammy Award for the song Me and Bobby McGee? Was it B, she was hospitalized due to an accidental overdose? Was it C, she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Or was it D, she bought a headstone for the grave of blues singer Bessie Smith? Janis Joplin, today, in 70. And question number two, what did singer Hank Williams Jr. do on this very day back in 1975? A, he won a Grammy Award for the song Country State of Mind. Was it B, he fell almost 500 feet down a mountain in Montana? Was it C, he was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame? Or was it D, he was accidentally shot by his drummer during a rehearsal? Hank Williams Jr., today, in 75. The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August the 8th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1923, that Benny Goodman, at the age of 14, took a job as a clarinet player on a Chicago-based excursion boat on Lake Michigan. Benny's beginnings today in 1923. And it was 56 years ago today, 1969, that the non-album single, Hot Fun in the Summertime, was released by Sly and the Family Stone. And that was 1969 today. Mahler's Eighth Symphony introduces our classical music news, and it's titled Music from the Shadows, Five Composers Who Channeled Mental Illness into Beautiful Art. A number of composers are known to have suffered from mental illness, but asked Stephen Johnson, himself a sufferer of bipolar disorder, did their affliction in fact provide the key to much of their creativity? This is published in BBC Music Magazine, written by Stephen Johnson on the 26th of May, 2025. genius is close to madness. The phrase is still widely repeated as though it were a self-evident truth. And when such luminaries as Pop Phenom, Lady Gaga, inform us that she prays for the gift of insanity in order to make her like the great creative people she admires, then it seems the idea is a long way from dying out. But there are good reasons to have doubts. In its extreme form, psychosis, that's to say, any mental illness so severe that it renders the sufferer incapable of coping with everyday life, is more often creatively fatal than not. Thin partitions do their bounds divide, but like its physical counterparts, mental illness comes in a huge range of degrees. What is sinking about John Dryden's poem is the suggestion that great creative intelligence is near to madness, not congruent with it. The two states are separated by thin partitions. The point is that the partitions are thin enough to allow the artist to see into the unconscious regions of the mind that emerge in psychosis, but that they still remain strong enough to prevent the artist from being overwhelmed by them. This may become a little clearer if we look at the works of five composers who appear to have suffered from some form of mental illness at some stage in their lives. The first four composers discussed in this article are Robert Schumann, Anton Bruckner, Peter Tchaikovsky, and Edward Elgar. Here is number five, Gustav Mahler. One of the most profound and introspective composers in classical music, Gustav Mahler faced bouts of depression, compounded by personal tragedies, anti-Semitism, and the deaths of his children. Depression was a recurring theme in Mahler's personal life and musical output. For one thing, he was the second of 14 children, of whom only six survived to adulthood. The early loss of his siblings had unsurprisingly a profound impact. Later, the death of his daughter Maria from scarlet fever and diphtheria was a devastating blow. Elsewhere, Mahler's marriage to Alma Schindler was not an easy one. Alma resented Mahler's dominant role in their relationship, and his demand that she abandon her own musical ambitions also rankled. Her identity and infidelity with the architect Walter Gropius placed a further strain on their marriage. So where can we hear this depression and existential angst in Mahler's music? In many places, including his songs on the death of children and the Mahler symphonies, one of which opened this particular section of the program. So can depression make for great music? Obviously, these issues are too complicated to be resolved in an article of this length, but at their heart lies a paradox worth considering here. Some form of mental illness may be the fuel for many great creative endeavors, but in the expression of them, the giving of them artistic form and substance, we find something very different, something perhaps best caught by the poet Heinrich Heine. Creating, I could hear my pain. Creating made me well again. It reminds me of a comment in the diaries of Jean Sibelius. Following a throat tumor operation, the composer had been ordered to abstain from alcohol, to which he was addicted for most of his life. Sibelius cries out in pain, "How can I rid myself of these terrible shadows, or perhaps get them into some kind of new perspective?" That his major work of that time, the Fourth Symphony, reflects some kind of agonizing mental struggle is clear to many listeners. Yet I have never found the work depressing. Indeed, when suffering from almost incapacitating clinical depression myself some years ago, I found it encouraging. Composing the fourth may have helped Sibelius. Listening to it helped me. Hearing how a creative mind transformed frightening potentially overwhelming feelings into something solid, strong, imaginatively brilliant, and even beautiful was an affirmative experience. Like Sibelius, I found a new perspective emerging as I listened to it and thought about it. The roots of a great work of art may, and I stress may, be in mental torment, but the urge to give it form is one of the sanest impulses of which the human mind is capable. Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, Cyndi Lauper Stays True to Herself and Has a Little Fun. This is written by Deborah Evans Price, published in Women's World, News and Observer, 16th of July, 2025. Cyndi Lauper is 72 years young, and she's as busy as ever entertaining audiences across the country and writing the score for Working Girl, a Broadway adaptation of the hit 1988 film. But in November, the lauded performer will enjoy a career milestone, being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm really happy, says Lauper, who joins the likes of Sister Rosetta Tharpe, Big Mama Thornton, and Brenda Lee in the honor. I'm proud to stand on the shoulders of the women who came before me, she says. When I was younger, I was angry at the world. I was the oddball. Then I learned it was my job to make the world fairer. Sometimes that's just smiling at someone. It's a tiny thing with a big impact. You must enjoy life as best as you can because, hey, when you're not here anymore, you're not here. Groundbreaking Grammy, Emmy, and Tony Award winner, singer, songwriter, activist, wife, and mom, Lauper is on the final leg of her farewell tour. But life wasn't always rosy for the star. Lauper shares how staying true to herself and having a little fun carried her through. Breathe away stress and worry. Before I did the kickoff show on my new tour, I had the first panic attack of my life, Lauper shares. I was worried about who was going to come and if I was even still able to do this. I wound up doing one of those breathing apps for meditation. Once I started doing it, I really calmed down. I just started breathing deeply and then I worked out a little bit and did my singing exercises. The first show was in Montreal, and when I got there, the arena was filled to the rafters. I almost started crying because I couldn't believe it. And then I just got on with it and did my best. Make a little noise. Making people happy is important, Lauper says, of what lifts her spirit. When I was a kid, I didn't fit in. I always felt like a loser. I started singing when I was two. After the lady upstairs taught me a song in Italian, then I sang it. Everybody then applauded, and I was hooked. The songs tell my story. We should all share our stories in some way. That's what I focus on, bringing community together. Embrace your path. All women must have endurance and strength, shares Lauper, of traits instilled in her by her mother and grandmother. You must push through challenges and get to the other side. Everyone has a purpose, and once you find it, don't let nobody get in your way. Dress for you. I chose a job where I could wear whatever the hell I want, Lauper laughs. Find the kind of clothes that makes you feel strong, inspired, and confident. If you find a hat that makes you feel good, wear the hat. Find the shoes that make you feel comfortable, the clothes that make you feel alive. When you do things just for yourself, it will make you truly happy. Enjoy puppy love. We've got two dogs. I'm supposed to have only one, but they were small when we got them, so I figured my husband wouldn't notice if there were two, Lauper says of her pugs, Ping and Lulu. They're very good dogs, but if strangers come up to them, they can turn into gremlins. So we try to warn people, yeah, they are cute, but don't come too close. Try a little walk therapy. If I'm really upset, I get off my butt and walk, Lauper says. Exercising is at least 20 minutes a day. Makes you feel a lot better. I also love yoga. I've had to adjust the yoga thing because as you get older, certain things work and some things don't. But yoga always grounds me. The final leg of the year-long Girls Just Want to Have Fun farewell tour kicks off July 17th at Xfinity Center in Massachusetts and will conclude in Los Angeles with two nights at the Hollywood Bowl on August 29 and 30. People come dressed up because it's a party, Lauper smiles. We sell wigs, and the proceeds go to the Girls Just Want to Have Fun, the Mental Rights Fund, which Lauper launched in 2022 to support women's rights. It's fun. It's a true celebration. We laugh. We cry. We sing. We dance. For more information, visit CindyLauper.com. Finally, in country, folk, and local music news, we have this article titled, Old Time Picker. In the high country, a guitarist has carried on the region's musical identity by teaching students the rich traditions of Appalachian music for five decades. This is published in Our State magazine, August 2025 issue, and written by Mark Kemp. It was the sound and feel of tires traversing a curvy dirt road deep in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Bumpy, scratchy, exhilarating, Rhonda George couldn't get enough of guitar boogie. Arthur Smith's changing 10-bar blues instrumental with a hillbilly twang. Every morning before school, she turned into Carolina Calling, the country music variety show that Smith taped out of WBTV in Charlotte. Rhonda watched the show on the little TV set in her family's home in the tiny mountain community of Ledger, and every morning she was awed. She wanted to play the guitar just like Smith, and that's exactly what she ended up doing. I wanted to learn more about Rhonda, the 70-year-old woman who lives in North Carolina's high country, where she spent a lifetime preserving Appalachian music, traditions, and teaching generations of young people how to play in the older styles. Maybe, I thought, she might agree to teach an old dog like me a few new tricks. These days, Rhonda not only performs bluegrass and old-time mountain hymns at churches and events across Mitchell County, but she also enjoys putting the spotlight on her five decades of students, many of whom, she says, have grown up to surpass her own abilities. She's being modest, of course. Sitting in the home studio in Ledger that she calls the Picking Parlor, she's trading guitar licks on her Martin D-16 with former students Sam McKinney and Kathy Kuhn. Their vocal harmonies and standards like the Winging My Way Back Home and Blessed Jesus Hold My Hand blend in like a band of angels. Rhonda's been around music all of her life. Her mother was a shape note singer at Bear Creek Baptist Church in nearby Bakersville, and a family friend, Oscar Red Wilson, was well known in the region for old-time fiddle tunes. He was her mentor, and under his tutelage, Rhonda learned not only the guitar, but also the fiddle, mandolin, banjo, and bass. For years after high school, she performed occasionally with Wilson's band, the Tow River Valley Boys. But she always longed for more. Rhonda wanted to learn everything she could about the music that stretches back generations in her own bloodline. Music that fueled the talents of so many of her heroes, Smith, Wilson, Elizabeth Cotton of Carrboro, and Doc Watson of Deep Gap. So she returned to school as an adult, earning her master's degree in Appalachian Studies at Appalachian State University. When Rhonda pulls a tattered copy of the Redback Hymnal from a nearby overstuffed bookshelf and demonstrates the way a shape note hymn is sung, she knows what she's talking about. She explains how the shapes revealed which notes and what pitch to sing in to mountain vocalists who couldn't read conventional sheet music. After hours of sitting around the Pickin Parlor with Rhonda, listening to her trio perform an encyclopedia of traditional mountain hymns and other tunes, Goodbye World, Goodbye, When You and I Were Young, Maggie, Wildwood Flower, Summertime, the others eventually bid adieu. The room becomes silent for the first time all day. Rhonda looks up from her chair. "So you want to learn a little finger-style picking?" she asks. "From a master player like Rhonda? It's the moment I've been waiting for." And for another hour she kindly and patiently guides me and my fingers through a step-by-step lesson on how to pick Elizabeth Cotton's classic song, Freight Train. Maybe one day, if I practice hard enough, I'll learn to play the guitar just like Rhonda George. And that was Doc Watson playing Doc's guitar. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what did singer Janis Joplin do on this very day back in 1970? Was it A, she won a Grammy Award for the song Me and Bobby McGee? Was it B, she was hospitalized due to an accidental overdose? Was it C, she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Or was it D, she bought a headstone for the grave of blues singer Bessie Smith? Correct answer? Answer D. It was on this day back in 1970 that Janis Joplin bought a headstone for the grave of her idol, blues singer Bessie Smith. As noted in Britannica.com, Janis Joplin was the premier white female blues vocalist of the 1960s who dazzled listeners with her fierce and uninhibited musical style. She was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1995, and she received a Grammy Award for Lifetime Achievement in 2005. And the answer to our second question, what did singer Hank Williams Jr. do on this very day back in 1975? Was it A, he won a Grammy Award for the song Country State of Mind? Was it B, he fell almost 500 feet down a mountain in Montana? Was it C, he was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame? Or was it D, he was accidentally shot by his drummer during a rehearsal? Correct answer? Answer B. He fell almost 500 feet down a mountain in Montana. As noted in the PBS.org biography, after a somewhat difficult early music career, Williams says he received this advice from a concerned doctor. "You've been taught to look like, act like, and be like your father, Hank Williams, your whole life. He died at 29, and you're going to beat him." Those were his exact words, and he added, "I want you to start saying, the hell with that, and you go do your thing, and you kiss that other stuff goodbye." That was some pretty good advice. Williams moved to Alabama in an attempt to pull his life together and find himself musically. He began a series of collaborations with Southern rock and outlaw musicians, Waylon Jennings, Charlie Daniels, the Marshall Tucker Band, and others, and released Hank Williams Jr. and Friends, generally considered his watershed album. Tragedy struck the following year when, while climbing Ajax Mountain in Montana, Williams fell 442 feet, crushing his face and splitting his skull in two. After 2 years of reconstructive surgery and recovery, in which he returned and relearned to speak and sing, he adopted his trademark beard, sunglasses, and hat, partly to hide the scars he suffered in that fall from the mountain, and he returned to the studio. He began the slow rebuilding of his career, this time entirely in the southern country rock genre. Hank Williams Jr.'s father, Hank Williams, is described as the father of contemporary country music. He died very young, but as big a star as he was, the bulk of his talent, sadly, was not discovered until after he was gone. When he was alive, he wrote, recorded, and released songs intended to be hit records. But it wasn't until his untimely death that the world really grasped and heard the tortured genius in songs like "I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry." Willie Nelson called this song a piece of literature. The silence of a falling star lights up a purple sky, and as I wonder where you are, I'm so lonesome I could cry. Willie concludes, there have never been any better lyrics in any song over that. It's amazing how many great songs he has like that, with great lines, no tricks. I learned all his songs, and I'm sure he was an influence on my songwriting, as well as Floyd Tillman and Leon Payne and all the Texas writers, along with Hank Williams. But yeah, he was a big influence. So we'll close out today's program with Hank Williams singing that particular song about crying. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, though, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.
Hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is whining low. I'm so lonesome I